The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsensewealth.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939. This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
It was a busy week with Chairman Powell speaking before Congress, the State of the Union address, Super Tuesday, the jobs report and ISM service figures, and some earnings splashed in there from semiconductor companies Broadcom and Marvell. I think Powell was a major player in the mood for stocks this week, despite saying nothing new. It was more the fact that nothing hawkish sounding came from his testimony that really supported the risk on trading this week, but that was changed as of Friday with the jobs report. There were some significant earnings announcements as well, but they didn't influence the macro as much. So let's start off looking at the individual stock level, talking about some company earnings and announcements this week. Starting off with Apple on Monday, was accused by the European Union of abusing its position for the distribution of music streaming apps through their App Store. Bloomberg reported an article that Tesla shipments from its China factory were down 19% year over year, which took some energy out of the stock Monday as well. New York Community Bancorp, which has been in the news a lot lately, plunged more than 40% Friday on a report it was trying to raise capital before rallying on news that it had secured the very capital it was accused of featuring for a mere $1 billion equity investment by former U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, Liberty Strategic Capital Company. Hudson Bay and Reverence Capital were in there as well. On the earnings front, Target rallied strongly after posting earnings Tuesday, beating earnings by 56 cents and rising 12% as the best performing stock in the S&P 500. The stock also received an upgrade by Deutsche Bank, stating that the 2024 guidance appears reasonable with room for upside. Analyst Paul Trussell said there are four drivers to top-line growth: expanded value assortment, reimagined loyalty offering, new membership program, and 300 store openings planned over the next 10 years. Cybersecurity company CrowdStrike was instrumental in the rally Wednesday with its earnings. The spending fatigue I mentioned from the Palo Alto networks earlier in the season was experiencing in fourth quarter was nowhere to be found in CrowdStrike's earnings. The company beat and raised guidance. CEO George Kurtz attributes the company's performance to its Falcon platform, which resolves threats beyond the endpoint protection with identity protection, cloud security, and log scale next-gen SIEM solutions, which stands for Security Information and Event Management, helping companies respond to threats before they have a chance to harm operations. CrowdStrike stock was up 13.3% on the day from earnings. Lots of earnings for investors to sift through Friday morning, with Broadcom's 62-cent beat on earnings and reaffirm to its 2024 guidance. Marvell reported inline earnings but guided below consensus for the first quarter. The company announced a $3 billion stock repurchase authorization. MongoDB was down on its results after a 40-cent surprise to earnings and beat on revenues, but the company guided below consensus for the first quarter on both earnings and revenues, as well as for fiscal year 2025. Gap, the clothing store, and DocuSign both beat bottom and top line estimates and guided higher for the first quarter with favorable investor responses to their news on Friday. Tuesday, stocks had some profit taking on news of a larger than expected drop in January factory orders, down 3.6% versus consensus for a drop of 2.5%, as well as on the news of a slowdown in the ISM Services Purchasing Managers Index for February, which fell to 52.6 from 53.4 previously, with the employment component showing a contraction reading at 48. CrowdStrike's earnings and comments from Powell on Wednesday were key to reinvigorating stocks. It was Chairman Powell's semi-annual meeting with Congress on Wednesday and Thursday. On Wednesday, he told the House Financial Services Committee he didn't think the U.S. economy is at risk of falling into recession, and if it acts as expected, it would be appropriate to dial back policy at some point in 2024. With no hawkish-sounding comments, the stock market was able to rebound on Tuesday's weakness. Thursday, he told the Senate Banking Committee it would be appropriate to cut rates later this year, again, pretty much reiterating what he told the House Financial Committee. It also helped Thursday that the unemployment claims unchanged, The fourth quarter productivity report and January trade balance report were all supporting the soft landing consensus. Friday's job report showed an increase of 275,000 jobs, with a tick higher in unemployment rate to 3.9%, with a slight drop in the annual growth of hourly earnings from 4.4% in January to 4.3% in February. At 3.9% unemployment rate, that's almost a half a percent off the lows for the unemployment rate that we saw last April in 2023. And that would trigger the Sam Rule recession signal. So whenever there's a half a percent rise in the unemployment rate, that's called the Sam Rule recession signal. Last time it was triggered was in 2008. It's now very important to track unemployment claims to see if it corroborates the unemployment rate in the non-farm payrolls. Bitcoin on Friday and early in the week made a few attempts to break 70,000. It came close, but no cigar. Gold has been on a tear as well this month, reaching new all-time highs intraday Friday at $2,185.19 for the futures contract last I looked. And last time I looked, the 10-year Treasury yield was also down Friday on the economic news, down to 4.07%. From a financial standpoint, President Biden's State of the Union gave the president an opportunity to discuss changes he'd like to address during a second term. He called for the increase in the corporate minimum tax to 21% from 15%, a 25% billionaire tax, more funding for Ukraine, tax credits for first-time homebuyers, a cap on prescription drug costs to $2,000 a year, and a review of the federal classification of marijuana. There was too much going on with corporate earnings and big economic announcements to determine really if investors were responding in a negative way or not to the address, or just simply profit-taking after stocks continued their advance Wednesday and Thursday. So again, a very busy week for sure to kick off the month of March. Powell reassuring investors of a soft landing and rate cuts to come, while the economic numbers also supported his comments. CrowdStrike did a lot to overturn the concerns facing Palo Alto Networks, and finally gold and Bitcoin making their moves to all-time highs. Up next, we have Bloomberg's chief equity strategist, Gina Martin Adams, who always does an amazing job combining technical and fundamental analysis, so we appreciate her showing up. Thank you, Gina.
It is widely anticipated that the Federal Reserve will be lowering interest rates this year. As a result, if you are an investor in CDs or T-bills, your income may decrease. Don't wait until it's too late. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management now to set up an account consisting of high-quality dividend aristocrats and high-quality bonds. These investments aim to provide increasing income over time, while also taking advantage of tax-efficient strategies. Our objective is to equip you with a steadfast and predictable strategy, helping you navigate the financial markets and provide for a more secure retirement now and in the future. Reach out to us at 888-486-3939 to get started. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, the stock market is optimistic as Wall Street looks at possible rate cuts. What does this mean for the market? Let's find out. Gina Martin Adams joins us from Bloomberg. Gina, let's start out with that. We've been in this kind of scenario. Are they going to cut? When are they going to cut? How much are they going to cut? That's one issue. And the second issue, soft landing, hard landing, or no landing. So let's begin with that.
Okay, that might take the whole half an hour, but we can certainly begin there. I do think that it's been kind of an on again, off again roller coaster with respect to Fed policy so far this year. What we see in the equity market, however, is generally stocks are detaching from the rates call, and I think that this is really important because for most of the last year or so, stocks were overly captivated by what's going on with rates, certainly falling as rates forecasts rose and as yields rose, and then rising in periods of time when yields were falling, and thoughts were that the Fed may ultimately ease. But so far this year, even though we've seen reduced prospects for Fed easing emerge, the equity market has held up very, very well. And I think that that's the important takeaway is stocks are detaching from this rates call. Even though rates are peripherally important to valuing stocks, what's really driving the equity market is actually very, very strong earnings growth trends. in the fourth quarter. The season that we just got through was, of course, the fourth quarter earnings season. And we found out that indeed S&P 500 companies posted an 8% earnings growth pace in the fourth quarter, as compared to what analysts were expecting of just less than 2%. So four times the pace of growth that analysts were expecting. We had beats across the board. More than 75% of companies beat expectations. That's well above long-term average. Most companies also beat on the revenue lines, and revenue growth, in particular revenue growth, excluding the commodity-sensitive sectors, which are still in some degree of distress, revenue growth was very, very strong on the S&P 500. So contrary to expectations, this year has really been about a beat on growth, which really no one was anticipating coming into 2024. Remember, the consensus view coming into 2024 is that we would have slower growth and slower inflation that would likely enable a Fed ease. What we actually have is still slow inflation, better growth, and maybe not a Fed ease. And that turns out to be pretty good condition for stock markets.
Gina, has it surprised you when we went from 0% interest rates to 5% interest rates? And of course, everybody remembers what happened in 2022. But right, here we are at 5% interest rates. And as you just mentioned, earnings are up. The economy's still up. We still have job growth. Is that surprising?
It's not terribly surprising because we had the correction in 2022. I think it's really easy to dismiss in hindsight, but when you get a 25% correction in stocks affiliated with an earnings correction, there was some really significant distress that emerged in 2022 that we're now starting to clear in 2023. Interest rates, I think, were a player in that, but not the predominant driver of that. I think what really happened in the broader economy and the stock market is we had an inflation spike in 2022. It created some behavioral shifts. Consumer spending decelerated materially. Business investment absolutely crashed as inflation was spiking. The result was very significant earnings distress. We had a 13% correction in the earnings stream in the S&P 500. And we saw stocks fall more than 20% in a typical sort of earnings recession kind of corrective process. Rates, I think, have been really interesting because what's gone on in rates is really just a full circle, where rates dropped to unsustainably low levels in the period of the pandemic. Very few people were actually borrowing money at that very low level of interest rates. It was not necessarily fueling economic activity. Rates have now normalized to be more consistent with what I think is a long-term pace of growth and inflation. And now we move into a new cycle. But it's been a very, very extraordinarily volatile period of time. I think that the big shock in 2022, 2023 was not necessarily due to a shift in rates, but really due to a shift in inflation, a very vicious shift in inflation that created earnings outcomes that then fed through to price outcomes. I think going forward, the question is, what is the sustainable rate or the neutral policy rate? And this is certainly a topic of great debate. But if you go back prior to the great financial crisis, in a period that I would consider to be somewhat more normal as a representative example of how the economy tends to operate, prior to the financial crisis, the average Fed funds rate in the US was somewhere between 5 and 5.5%. Then we had the financial crisis. We went through a period of nearly 10 years of deleveraging. And of course, rates were abnormally low. But now I think it's very possible that we move back to more normal conditions in which leverage generally increases over time. The average growth rate is probably much higher as a result of the fact that we're no longer delevering. And maybe 5 to 5.5% is actually neutral Fed funds rate. It does seem so far that the economy can withstand 5 to 5.5%, but that remains to be seen over the next couple of years. We'll certainly see.
Well, I know that Jerome Powell was an advocate for normalization of interest rates. They tried that between 2018 and 2019. They pulled back, got rates down back to zero. And then, of course, the shutdown and the pandemic took over. But here we are, as you mentioned, we're at five. We're actually at normal, what we call Fed funds rate, that have been in place for several decades.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we do have to consider what is normal, considering the pace of growth and real growth as well as inflation. And, you know, a Taylor rule would suggest that we should be at a higher level of Fed funds. You know, it will remain to be seen. The one missing kind of link in this whole period of volatility in the earnings stream has really been what's happening with jobs. Jobs have remained abnormally strong. That's powered abnormally strong, at least relative to the last decade, wage growth, which has sort of kept things afloat. Will we ultimately see jobs decelerate? I think is a really big key to this, because if we see job growth decelerate or even contract, if we see wage growth start to contract as a result of fewer and fewer jobs, then that really changes the game on, you know, where the policy rate should stand. But right now, it looks to me like we're pretty close to neutral.
And a big day tomorrow, because we get the unemployment numbers, and of course, everybody's going to look at the job growth. So how key do you think that will be for the market going forward? I mean, 1 month isn't a trend, but what if that trend in January continues?
Yeah, I think it will be pretty key. I think that there also have been, there will probably be some statistical adjustments to the employment numbers that will be notable. I think the BLS goes through the process of reestimating employment conditions, and this is a number that gets rehashed over and over and over. So I think we're probably going to see over time that maybe the job market was not as strong as many had thought back in 2022 and 2023, and maybe materially weaker today than many of us think. That said, will we see the traditional 400 basis points increase in the unemployment rate that is normally affiliated with recession? That does seem unlikely. So it probably is more of a mixed picture than it is a super strong job growth picture that I think emerges over the course of the next several months. We get more mixed reviews or more mixed information about the job market. But that's going to make the job of the Fed pretty tough, because sort of a mixed job market in an environment where inflation is, you know, merely just stable at an above average pace or above 2% pace anyway, would suggest maybe not a lot of movement in Fed policy rates, which I think the market is certainly contemplating right now with this kind of on again, off again movement in the bond market with respect to interest rate forecasts.
Let's talk about stocks in general. Within the S&P, once again, the number one performing sector this year is technology. Within the S&P, it's up about 12.5%. And of course, we all know last year was the story about AI and technology. Do you see that trend continuing?
You know, I think that there's more to the story than tech in the S&P 500. Certainly tech and communications together are the top performing sectors year to date. But if you look over the most recent month, you have a bit more participation. Industrials, for example, are up 5.5% over the last month. Material stocks are up 7.7%, where tech is up about 5.5% as well. So there have been more participants emerging, and certainly there is a potential for some sector leadership shifts. If you look at the tech relative price chart, it does appear to be consolidating. Over the period of the last several months, tech has not made new relative price highs to the S&P 500. That's notable. Doesn't necessarily mean a shift in trend, but it does suggest that the trend is getting somewhat potentially exhausted in tech, and it might be due for a period of cool off while some of the other laggards in the S&P 500 start to catch up. We actually run a technical pattern recognition software program called Automated Technical Pattern Recognition. It is run by an analyst on my team named Anthony Feld. And what it has discovered over the last several months are breakouts emerging in particular healthcare. So that was one of the certainly biggest laggards in the market over the course of 2023. We're starting to see new breakouts emerge and new highs emerge for the healthcare space as well. So I think the story of 2024 is a story where we see more participation, we see more companies actually joining the tech ranks and joining the rally, and it's much less of a one-sided market and much more participation starts to emerge this year.
Let's move on to another asset category. I want to talk about the bond market. I mean, if you take a look at the popular ETF, TLT, this is almost the third year in a row that it's been negative.
Yeah, and I do think that there is an ongoing shift that's pretty notable with respect to stocks and bonds and the relationship between the two. Correlations are very, very different between stocks and bonds in an environment where we're not deleveraging and versus an environment where we're leveraged, enjoying the possibility of levering up. And we have seen that shift emerge. So I do think that what's happening in the broader economy is we are no longer delevering. Therefore, the bond market is shifting, it's changing its stripes somewhat. Yields are overall in an uptrend now, whereas for the period of time between 2007 and 2020, yields were very, very staunchly in a downtrend or a bottoming pattern. Now yields do appear to be breaking higher. You know, we're not as high as we were in the latter part of 2023, but nonetheless, that overall trend is for higher yields. And the result is the stocks bonds correlation is very, very different. And I think that this is a reflection of a couple of things. I mentioned deleveraging. When we were deleveraging, of course, bond yields were very, very low. Inflation pressures were extremely low. The stocks bonds correlation was in a very different state than where we are today, where inflation is generally a bit higher than it was in the post-Great Financial Crisis period. It's more volatile as well. Bond market yields are rising somewhat, and that creates very different conditions in the financial markets at large. So I do think you want to watch inflation trends pretty carefully. So far this year, inflation has been a little bit stickier than many people had hoped it would be coming into this year, and I think that's getting reflected in the bond market predominantly.
I want to talk about another sector. Let's talk about cryptocurrencies. One of the number one performing stocks last year was a company called MicroStrategy. Who would have thought it would have gone from what it was close to 130 all the way up to today? It's almost 1300. And the stock is known for probably one of the largest owners of crypto or Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's not a stock that normally hits my radar because I tend to follow large cap stocks most predominantly, but certainly what's happening in cryptos at large and Bitcoin specifically breaking out this year and starting to gather momentum last year, I do think reflects some renewed optimism about investability of this space. Certainly the approval of the Bitcoin ETF has allowed for flows to come into crypto and all crypto-related companies and assets. And so it has created a leg of optimism for this group, and that's naturally getting reflected in some of the equities that are exposed to this ongoing trade.
Yeah, the surprising thing, and it almost becomes a self-feeding loop, because as the media focuses on what's going on with crypto, when we're seeing Bitcoin at but 68,000 or up in that range, more money chases that money, because as more money comes into those crypto ETFs, that means they're going to have to go out and buy more crypto.
Yeah, I think that's a very good characterization of what's going on. I think it's difficult as an equity investor to really get a huge beat on this. When I think about valuing an equity, I have a profit stream that I can value. I deflate that profit stream by an interest rate to get a value of a stock. It's very different with crypto. I think this is more about supply and demand. Clearly, there is an improving amount of demand for this asset class that's resulting in inflation and prices.
Okay, and speaking of crypto and things that might be inflationary, let's talk about gold for a minute. This is, I think, week number 15 or 16 that we've seen the price of gold over 2,000, and now it's breaking out, and we're, 2160, 2150 in that range. What's your take on gold here?
I don't necessarily forecast gold. Again, I'm an equity investor. I would say that I think, it probably is a reflection of a few things. Certainly, anticipation of easier interest rates, lower interest rates probably plays out through some traditional dollar currency deflation, which results in some reinflation in gold, some interest in gold. There's a tie between what happens with Fed policy as well as the dollar with gold as well. Well, as Bitcoin, I think. So in any sort of environment in which the Fed makes policy easier and liquidity more available, I would anticipate that some of these asset classes get more and more attention. So I think that's probably part of it. Broadly, I would suspect that gold also generally benefits from a somewhat risk-averse global investor. You know, we've had a lot of concern over whether or not the U.S. economy, as well as the European economy, is in some sort of recessionary state. There's concern about what's going on in China. The global investor base is definitely not particularly optimistic and certainly somewhat risk averse. You know, with the exception of what's going on in crypto, I do think that most major markets still reflect this kind of degree of risk aversion and uncertainty with respect to the macro outlook. And that probably is helping to elevate the price of gold as well.
So as we take a look, you mentioned that we're starting to see a broadening in the general market. We've got healthcare moving up. We've got the industrials. We have financials that have been doing very well. Do you see that trend continuing? In other words, right now we're seeing technology sort of consolidate and people are looking where the values are or where there's a better space to invest. Would you see that?
I think it'll depend on whether or not these companies can put up reasonable earnings growth prospects. And at least so far, they do appear to be doing so. I mean, what we see in healthcare, for instance, the price improvement in healthcare is not just sort of circumstantial or not evidence-based. What we actually see is healthcare is leading positive revision momentum trends on the S&P 500. So there's a budding optimism with respect to the earnings outlook that is backing up the healthcare trade in particular. With financials, you know, some of this could be about the Basel endgame and where we're going with financial sector regulation. These companies have obviously been bulking up their balance sheets in anticipation of commercial real estate loan losses to the degree that they are relatively well positioned there and they can enjoy the turn in the yield curve and drive some earnings growth. That could be a source of optimism for financials within the energy, materials, and industrial space. Commodities have also been in a tremendous drag on performance over the course of the last 2 years. To the degree that we have stability in commodities prices emerge, that would help to stabilize the earnings trends in those sectors as well. So, you know, the answer to your question really is if we can see some earnings improvement drive, I would expect that we would see some broadening and some better performance continue in a lot of these sectors. I think one of the things that we forget is tech didn't sort of just spontaneously start outperforming. It was really started to outperform because its earnings cycle turned early. Tech stocks in general saw much better earnings trends emerge well before the rest of the S&P 500, in particular the Magnificent Seven stocks or the biggest stocks in the S&P 500 posted extremely strong earnings growth over 2023 to back up the price optimism that emerged in that space. So going into 2024, we would need to see earnings improvement, I think, really drive capital and also improve risk tolerance with respect to the rest of the S&P.
So as summing up, as we've taken a look at the general allocation in investment portfolios, that 60-40 rule, 60% equities, 40% bonds, we talked about over the last 3 years, bonds have not done that well. What does this imply going forward about that asset allocation shift?
I think a lot of it will depend upon where inflation settles. You know, it does look like, at the very least, the Fed is done hiking interest rates in the near term. Whether or not they can reduce interest rates is still up for debate, and that will somewhat depend upon the conditions of growth and inflation. But in particular, inflation. If inflation is relatively stable, you would expect the bond market weakness to dissipate to some degree. If growth is relatively strong and inflation is relatively stable, that's a great condition for equities. So I think it will largely depend upon the combination of growth and inflation. Remember, the bond market's been under a great degree of distress because we have had an anomalous inflation environment emerge over the course of the last several years. Very, very volatile inflation is very difficult conditions for the bond market investor. And if we can see some stabilization in inflation, that could really improve that leg of the portfolio.
So going forward, if you had money to invest, would you be looking outside the tech area or maintain, let's say, an equal balance in tech? Where would you be going?
You know, I always think that depends on the individual and their overall risk tolerance. One chart that I'm watching really, really carefully right now is actually small caps in the US, which do appear to be breaking out above some pretty considerable resistance levels. This is an area that is still trading incredibly cheap to large cap equities and certainly an area that not a lot of investors have wanted to touch. So I wouldn't be too scared to keep a close eye on small caps as an area of opportunity where not a lot of people have gone, where there still is, you know, a tremendous amount of discounting in the equity market. I also think, you know, there's no reason necessarily right now fundamentally to fade some of the winners. I think as an investment class, we oftentimes tend to cut our flowers a little bit too early, and certainly the flowers in the portfolio have been tech. So I don't want to fade that trade too heavily. That said, there are a lot of other emerging opportunities out there. And so I think diversifying into some other ideas while still holding on to winners is probably the way that I would approach equity strategy right now.
All right. Well, listen, Gina, I know that I follow you on my Bloomberg terminal, but if our listeners would like to follow the works that you do, I think you're on LinkedIn and Twitter, are you not?
Yes, I am on both platforms, and I am at Gina Martin Adams on both platforms. So hopefully relatively easy to find and follow, and I certainly welcome the follow as well as the interaction.
All right, Gina, as always, it's a pleasure speaking with you. You have a great day.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense NewsHour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can visit us on our website, financialsensewealth.com. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and market strategists, go to the Financial Sense website and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of the Financial Sense NewsHour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.